Welcome to the middle of the air.
Hi, this is Ken Butcher. In this episode, I got to spend some time with Anne B. Ross, author of the popular Miss Julia series. I have met Anne before. I've had the privilege of meeting her, but she was surrounded by her devoted fans. And I can tell you they are incredibly devoted, excited group, and they would be the envy of any writer, I think.
Thank you.
And we're here today because I know of at least two events in the world of Anne Ross. And I'm going to do my best through this interview not to call you Miss Julia. If I can make it make it through this interview without ever calling you Miss Julia, I think I can do that.
Okay.
Because I know you're not Miss Julia.
Right.
But anyway, you have a new book coming out, which is called Miss Julia Inherits a Mess.
Exactly.
Is that right? And that comes out
Tuesday, April the 5th.
And you're going to have
a launch event here at Novels and Novelties, formerly the Fountainhead, on Main Street in Hendersonville.
Excellent. And I noticed also, if I read your website right, that you have Miss Julia Lays Down the Law coming out in paperback just
yes.
a few days later on the 16th.
Yes.
I read somewhere recently that it was an interesting number that e-book sales went down last year by a few percent. And paperback sales went up by exactly the same percent.
Oh, I didn't see that.
So it was interesting. I think everyone's assuming ebook sales are going to...
Right. I've heard that they expected ebook sales to be about 30%. This was a couple of years ago. And then level off. But it sounds as if they're dropping a little.
I was very surprised to hear that number. And I don't remember the details. It was like 6 or 8%.
Wow.
And I think it was over the year of 2015, maybe.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, Miss Julia Inherits a Mess will be on Kindle and Nook and all the rest of them on the 5th of April, as well as the hardcover.
Excellent. Excellent. So if I was adding up the books in the series. Is this the 15th in the series?
No, actually, this one is the 18th.
The 18th. I must have miscounted.
Well, sometimes you either count Etta Mae's worst bad luck day or you don't, because she's a little out of the series, although the same characters are in that book. But I am now working on the 19th book for next year.
And for anyone that isn't familiar with them at all, what genre is this classified as? I know that's a sticky subject.
Yes,
sometimes.
It is. And I would say, well, they've been called a comedy of manners, but I'm not sure it reaches that high level. But humor,
uh-huh.
Although some of the publicity folks put it in mystery. But there's not much mystery in there, and there's a little bit of,
But they're not
tension.
Murder mysteries.
No.
See, that's a mistake. When I first heard about the Miss Julia series, I thought it was going to be
Miss Marple. I try to avoid that.
So tell us a little bit about, Miss Julia in general, and the character and the series.
Okay.
What is she like, and
what is she like? Well, it seems that she's like a lot of people that people know, because they come up and ask me, when did you meet my aunt?
Uh-huh.
She is exactly like Miss Julia. You must have known my grandmother or the lady next door or something.
Right.
So I'm assuming that I was fortunate enough to put together a character that it just represents a whole lot of people, a mixture of traits and characteristics and features and so on. And I suppose she's also a combination of strong Southern women that I've known, but she is not based on any one particular person
mm-hmm.
that I've ever known or that I know now. She appeared to me, in my mind, full-blown with her full name, her attitude. The only thing that did not come to me at first was when I pictured her, and she came first as a mental image, she was holding the hand of a little boy. And mm-hmm. I could not figure, what was she doing with it? She was too old for him to be her son.
Right.
And I thought, but she didn't act like a grandmother.
Right.
She was stiff, uncomfortable with this child.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tried, next door neighbor, all this other stuff, and it's weighed on my mind. And it wasn't until I figured out who that child was that the story, I realized I had something to say, or rather that character had something to say.
Right.
And that started the first book.
That is fascinating. So that goes, and has, would you say, like over the years, over the books in the series, has she changed much, or has she stayed the same?
Oh, that's an excellent question, because I read somewhere sometime that a protagonist should, in some way, in each book, change.
Right.
Learn something,
right.
Grow in some way. And so, yes, definitely in that first book, she changed. And I try to do it in every book. Sometimes don't quite succeed, but I do try. I keep that in mind, that she should learn something and have her mind expand or whatever.
And that's interesting. I mean, that's a fascinating. So you really work off of, or started anyway, from a visual image.
Exactly.
And just kind of worked from there.
Mm-hmm.
And is that, do you find that happening with almost every book that you write? Or?
Well, I've lived with these characters now for about 16, 17 years,
right.
Longer than that, really. And I can just, my mind just goes back to that little town, and I've tried in every book to introduce a new character, or be a minor character,
mm-hmm.
But to fill that town with different characters and personalities and so on. And mm-hmm. so I'm very at home there. And, you know, these are not murder mysteries, so I don't have to worry about that, but I do have to have some plot.
Right.
But
some problem that she's helping with.
Exactly. Yeah. A problem that Miss Julia has to solve, but I do not want her to be a meddling Miss Marple.
Okay.
So I have to work at that as well. And, of course, the problems are essentially minor, but they appeal to a lot of people.
Well, I was thinking about that. I was reading a little bit of Miss Julia stirs things up.
Stirs up trouble.
Stirs up trouble.
Uh-huh.
Where you have a lot of the recipes and stuff.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, this is a kind of, at first I thought exactly what you said. This is a kind of a minor problem.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it's a fundamental problem. Someone's got a problem, and, you know, it comes down to how is this person going to get fed,
yeah.
and who's going to take care of them, and
yeah.
you can call it minor, but you know, something like that happens, that's what you have to deal
right.
with.
Right. It's small town, and it's, you know, things that people face
mm-hmm.
constantly. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, let me change gears a little bit.
Okay.
I want to ask you, I know you've been asked 1,000 times about your writing habits. How do you write? I was reading that you like to write in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a really early riser?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Although I don't get started so early because I have to do the crossword puzzles.
Okay.
And have a cup of coffee. And I always get dressed. I know some writers will write all morning in their pajamas.
Uh-huh.
I can't do that. I got to get dressed in case nobody ever knocks on the door, but just in case they do.
Just in case they do. Well, it could make you feel like, okay, I'm going to work here.
Exactly.
You know, this is kind of set the stage.
And for anybody who's beginning to write, I think it's really important to have a designated space, designated time, because you get into that routine and
right.
that rhythm, and your mind turns on when you sit down at that place knowing that's where you're going to write. It works for me.
So what does your writing room look like? What if I walked in there right now?
Oh,
what
okay.
would I see?
Well, you
I imagine, in my mind, it's this perfectly neat, with little rows of pens, and what does it look like?
No, you would walk right into my living room and look over to my dining room table that's right up against a French door that looks out on a little garden, and I have a laptop right there and a dictionary, which I cannot do without, for looking up synonyms and checking spelling, which I do as I go along.
Uh-huh.
And I've got little notes and papers and little post-its all around. I am not neat.
Okay, I'm so glad to hear that.
No, I'm not neat.
I'm so glad to hear that. All right. Yeah, I don't know what made me think of this question when I was going through it. Do you keep the early drafts of your books or throw them away?
I have some. They don't always send back the manuscript. But now that we send things by email,
mm-hmm.
don't have them anyway.
Right.
Although, you know, you've still got them on your computer. And
so you do everything on screen. You don't print it out to, like, proofread or anything?
I used to. Uh-huh. I used to do, and I had to go mail in a first draft and then the final draft and so on. Uh-huh. But now they want everything by email.
What would I see if I were a fly on the wall? Or if I, what would I observe if I came in during one of your writing sessions? Would you be constant? Would I see your hands on the keyboard constantly going away, or do you pace around, or do you look out the window?
No, I don't pace around. Occasionally, I'll get up and get a half cup of coffee or something like that. But if I come to a stopping place, I just stop and think about it for a few minutes, and then. But yeah, usually I'm working right along.
Okay. You sound like a very disciplined. Well, anyone that's put out this many books has got to be a very disciplined writer.
Well, I don't know. You get. I don't know how you write, but I see the image of what's happening,
uh-huh.
and so all I do is describe it.
Right.
And so that's my writing process.
And I read somewhere else on your website, your advice to young writers is they have to write. They have to just get out there.
Yeah, you do.
There's no substitute for it.
Well, you know, it's a craft. Mm-hmm. And you get better at a craft the more you practice it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there's an art to it, too, I admit, but you don't have much, I don't have much say about that. But it's something I think takes practice. And it takes a lot of reading. How has another writer done it?
Right.
How do you, you know, it was an amazing thing to me to realize, and this was years ago, that in order to indicate the passage of time, you just skip an extra space.
Uh-huh.
One paragraph can end, let's go to Jim's house. And then you skip an extra space and say, we knocked at Jim's door.
Right.
Couldn't tell getting in the car and stopping at a red light or, you know.
Right.
And it works.
Yes.
So there are a lot of little things like that that you need to be a reader.
Yeah, and I it's interesting you said that because I was just reading something about from an editor that says he gets a lot of things where the writer went into too much detail.
Yes.
Like, what happened between when you left your house and you got to Jim's house?
Right.
Well, nobody cares how many red lights you...
Exactly. Unless something happens.
Unless something happens.
That's important to the plot.
Right, right. So you work without an outline.
Right.
And do you ever get stuck? Do you ever get in the middle of a book and just say, oh my gosh.
Yeah. In fact, in the first book, I did. I got to a certain point, and I did not know where it was going and what was going to happen or anything, and I had worked on it. Actually, I'd worked on it off and on all day, and I got to the spot, and I ended it by saying that somebody knocked at the back door, and I just put it up and went to bed. And the next morning.
And you didn't know who.
Like, no, I did not. I did.
I love it. I love it.
And so the next morning, Miss Julia opens the door, and there was somebody, and it went right on from there.
I love it. Can I use that sometime if I get stuck? And there was a knock on the back door.
Go to bed.
Now, and let me ask you this. I mean, what, how should I put this? What, over the years, what is your confidence level like now?
Ooh.
In other words, you know, almost any writer of something of any length will have days where you think, oh, this is going real well. Then you'll have other days where you think, what am I fooling everyone here? Do you still have those after 18 books?
Yes, I do. Let me tell you something. I went back to school at a late age. Mm-hmm. I was a non-traditional student, and I majored in literature and early medieval studies. But so I've read a lot of good literature.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's not what I'm writing.
Mm-hmm.
And it is always a surprise to me when people seem to like these books so much.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, you know, I don't have a whole lot of confidence because I can't help but compare to the real writers that I've read.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think and you must have thought about this, really fundamentally on the ground level, what is the appeal of Miss Julia? What is it about her that so many people are identifying with?
Well, I think from the emails I get, they like the idea that she is so outspoken. Although if you study the books, you will see that she's really not that outspoken, but she's out thinking.
Right.
Because we're reading, I write in first person.
Yeah.
And so we're hearing her thoughts. And I think she thinks the way a lot of readers think. You know, she tells it like it is. I've had people write to me, I'm 72 years old, I want to be like Miss Julia when I grow up.
I saw that, one of those on your website.
Right.
What a great thing.
Just, anyway, I don't know. I keep thinking every book they're going to discover, and that's going to be the end of it. But anyway.
Speaking of reading literature and things that influence you, I noticed that you listed To Kill a Mockingbird
mm-hmm.
as one of the books that really influenced you.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you why. I love that book, and when I was teaching at UNC Asheville, a freshman writing class, I signed that book for them to write an essay on.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like what the Germans call Bildungsroman, building blocks,
mm-hmm.
building novel that is coming of age.
Okay.
And see, I think that's what my first book was, Miss Julia coming of age, even though she was an elderly woman,
mm-hmm.
all of a sudden she saw the world the way it actually was, and it changed her, deeply changed her. And so, well, I don't know if it's fair to say that an elderly woman can have a coming-of-age story, but that's the way I see it.
That's an interesting take. I would have never thought of that, but I see what you mean.
Do you? Good.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, we're never too old to have that moment, I guess.
That's right.
That's right. That's a pretty that's fundamental right. appeal
and she,
right there.
And she was in a marriage that very little was expected of her other than keep up the good front.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of women, particularly of my age,
mm-hmm.
Could identify with that.
Right.
Do the right thing and don't think about anything else. And all of a sudden she had to think of something else.
Right.
So.
Right. What about, did you read Harper Lee's the book that came out last year, Ghost Set of Watchmen?
I have not read that.
Are you going to?
I don't know. I've read so many different things about it, and I just hate the thought that somebody might have taken advantage of her.
Right.
But I don't know that for
sure. There was another book out, I don't know if you saw it, called The Mockingbird Next Door.
Yes, and I've not read that.
That you probably, I'll tell you, it's written by a journalist who ends up befriending or being befriended by the sisters, Harper and Alice.
I read about that book, yes.
And when I was reading a little bit of your Miss Julia, because she talks in this book about just everyday things. We went out for coffee. We had a movie night. We went and fed the ducks at the pond.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of reminded me, I thought those two sisters would fit right into a Miss Julia book.
I think you
might like that.
Okay.
Well, I notice you have a big travel schedule coming up the next 2 weeks.
Well,
pretty busy.
We'd be busy on tour. Actually, this year is very limited. In the past 2 years, I've done two tours for the past 2 years in each year. And usually my tours take around 2,800, 3,000 miles, and I drive.
Uh-huh.
I don't fly.
Uh-huh.
And I told them this year, please, let's limit it. So I think I'm only going about 1,000 or 1,500 miles.
But it looked like it was pretty packed for 2 weeks.
Oh, it is. They all,
weeks.
See, that's what they do. When they set up a regular tour, they do just a big loop, leaving from Hendersonville, might go to Raleigh, and then down to Charleston, then to Atlanta and Birmingham, Jackson, Memphis, and come on around and
mm-hmm.
all. And yes, I would drive every morning, speak at a bookstore that evening, get up and go to another city and do the same thing.
What do you enjoy about that, and what was challenging about it?
I run on adrenaline, right. Mostly, you know. Well, I love meeting people. I really do, because they're so enthusiastic and excited. Yeah.
That's got to make you feel good. I was not kidding. I've seen you around your fans, and they adore you.
Oh, me. And I've heard a few writers when they're on tour and to me, and maybe it depends on the kind of books that they're writing, I feel that if somebody gets home from work, or either they've cooked supper and then they've gotten ready and they've driven to a bookstore to hear me, I want to entertain them. And I do. And yet some writers will get up and read from their book.
And they almost seem like they resent being there.
Yeah, or something. And I get real excited when I speak to them. And I keep track of all the funny, unusual things that happened over the year, and then talk to them about it.
Well, that, so it's fun. I've seen you talk, and that really comes across that you're being enthusiastic. So.
Thank you.
How can your fans best follow you? I noticed your website.
Which badly needs updating.
MissJulia.com, right?
Yes, yes.
www.MissJulia.com.
Yes. And I am on Facebook.
On Facebook?
Yes.
As?
Ann B. Ross.
Ann B. Ross.
Yes. And I am computer ignorant. They had to beat me to get me on Facebook and give me somebody who will handhold me over the telephone to tell me how to do it. But that's going well.
Okay.
But good. I'm not on Twitter or LinkedIn or I don't have time. I don't know how people have time to do all that stuff.
It takes a lot of time. It does. Mm. Yeah.
I'd rather be writing.
I think your fans would rather you be writing too.
People can email me.
Okay.
I don't do much answering on Facebook, but if you send me an email.
Thank you very much, Anne, and have a great time with your launch and your tour, and keep on writing for all of us. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're very kind. Thank you.
Well, Anne B. Ross wanted me to give you her email address, since we forgot to do that during the podcast, and that is aross@missjulia.com, aross@missjulia.com. Thanks for listening to the Middle of the Air podcast. This is Ken Butcher. To listen to more episodes or subscribe, visit our website at themiddleoftheair.com. And thanks again to Novels and Novelty Bookstore, Mainstream Tennessee. Thanks.